Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Krishna Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Vrtani Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Vastrachade Shatarne Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gauravakta Vrinda
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
I think it's slightly too loud and a little too much treble. Oh, devotees and friends, how nice to be here with you all. And I hope you're all happy in Krishna consciousness. Today we are having a special program. Many of you would be aware that approximately a week ago, what day was it? Sure. On the 4th means what, 12 days ago, was the birth anniversary of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the founder Acharya of this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And some of you, I'm sure, were here that evening for the celebrations and different observances. Perhaps some of you may not have been here, but we are going to revisit the occasion. We are going to again discuss about the activities, teachings, qualities of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. This is Prabhupada here, of course. The founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And I'm not sure where Sweta Dweep Prabhu has gone, but he had mentioned that perhaps I could mention a few of my own little experiences with Srila Prabhupada, and then some other things, just other anecdotes and different accounts of different things that Prabhupada did. So what do you think? What do you think? Is that okay?
Yes, good.
She said it's okay. It's okay. Thank you. So I should do like that, Swetadik Prabhu. Did you hear?
No. I'm just offering the
material. Okay.
Yes, Maharaj, we can.
Some of my own experiences or just in general?
Together.
Together. Okay, well, you asked for it. Here we go. All right. Let me then begin by describing my first meeting or encounter with Srila Prabhupada. Yes, that took place in New Zealand. I'm actually born and raised in New Zealand. And it was 1972, April, 46 and a half or so years ago. I was studying in Auckland University, New Zealand. I must admit, very unenthusiastically, I hate to say it, but it's true. I just wasn't so interested. It was more to fill in time than anything else. I was studying philosophy because I was interested in philosophy. I was very interested in different ideas about what is life and who are we and all that sort of thing. So there I was one morning in April, mid-April. Well, Prabhupada gave a talk, like a lecture, which was recorded. I've seen it featured in a few different publications here and there, and different dates have been ascribed to it, all in April. But I saw one saying it was the 14th, another said it was the 12th. So I couldn't tell you exactly when in April 1972 it was, but it was sort of sometime in the middle, I guess, of April 72. I was wandering through the campus in, like I said, a rather disinterested way with a friend of mine. And what should we hear but a sound like the sound of little bells ringing coming from our right-hand side. Sounded like that, yeah. So we looked across, and who did we see? Perhaps not more than 20 meters away was Srila Prabhupada himself. So that means Srila Prabhupada was the first devotee I ever saw. Yeah, it's true. So there was Srila Prabhupada strolling nonchalantly into the campus grounds. His head was back like this. He would sometimes walk like that. Sort of, you could say, looking down his nose at the material world, which he had a right to do. And it sort of deserved it. So, yeah, there he was. But on either side were two very nice-looking young ladies in their 20s, early 20s or thereabouts, in saris, right next to Prabhupada. You know, maybe half a meter away on either side, and they were dancing very gracefully, wearing saris. And at first I couldn't figure out, what are these clothes they're wearing? And I thought, oh, maybe this is something to do with ancient Greece. Well. But as they were dancing very gracefully and gently, very rhythmically and nicely, they were throwing rose petals in just right in front of the feet of Srila Prabhupada as he walked forward slowly. And I saw this whole sight, and this idea, an idea just popped into my mind, literally, spontaneously out of nowhere. This must be like heaven, because it was really just very sweet, like a very cultured looking scene, and so much gracefulness. And so that's what I thought. That I saw behind Prabhupada some of the young male devotees, there perhaps half a dozen or so, and some other young women, but particularly I noticed the young men. They had robes on, as some of our devotees here are wearing, and they had shaved heads like me. And in those days, that was in 1972, to have short hair, particularly no hair, it was not cool. It was really sort of the height or the lowest depth of uncoolness. So I saw this, and having thought, this must be like heaven, seeing this, now the young men, I thought, oh, that's not very good. I had long hair at the time. So anyway, Srila Prabhupada proceeded through, walked more or less right past me, and in the quadrangle, just right nearby, was a little raised, like a little stage was there. Prabhupada sat on the stage, and the devotees got on the stage, a small stage. They got on with him, and Prabhupada started to sing Hare Krishna. And they, of course, they had been singing, and the bells were the kartals. But I hadn't recognized what was really going on, because I was fascinated initially by seeing Prabhupada and the young women. And then a little sort of not so appreciative of the young men. So nothing was really registering like clearly until Prabhupada sat down and started singing Hare Krishna. And of course, you know, that was 1972. And Hare Krishna, the Hare Krishna mantra, was well known amongst the young people in the Western world in those days, because George Harrison of the Beatles had helped the devotees in London make a record of the Hare Krishna mantra, which was released as a 45 single record in the commercial market. And it had been number one on the hit parade. And I was a bit of a hit parade man. So I knew I'd heard Hare Krishna. Oh, I definitely heard it many times. And Prabhupada started singing. And I recognized, oh, this is Hare Krishna. Aha, this is Hare Krishna. And some of you perhaps have heard me say before that in my just total ignorance of what was what in regards to Hare Krishna, when I heard Prabhupada singing Hare Krishna and I recognized, oh, this is that Hare Krishna mantra, then I thought, maybe he is Krishna. We all make mistakes. So Prabhupada gave a class, I stayed, perhaps not for the whole thing, but for a fairly substantial part of it, then we had to go. But it really made an impression, made a very deep impression on the heart. And you know, a very interesting thing that happened immediately afterwards and for the following so many months until I got more involved was that I started to perceive more and more clearly what was wrong with life in this world. People just working hard and running around and in so many cases doing something they don't like doing, but they have to do it. And so more and more I was seeing it as being senseless and certainly not fulfilling or satisfying. And that realization, that perception became so clear, so just crystal clear in my mind, I started feeling a little depressed about it. I could recognize that this is sort of, you know, I don't feel good. And I understood it was because I was seeing things like this, which were true. But then I told myself, stop thinking like this. Stop seeing things like this. It's typical illusion. You see something for what it is, but then you say, no, I don't want to see it for what it is. I want to see it for what it isn't. Anyway, then I went over to England. I went through Australia, stayed in Sydney for a couple of months, or yeah, a few months even. And while I was in Sydney, in those days, many of you know, perhaps some of you don't, I was, so to speak, a member of the surfing community, if you can call it a community. But I was in that kind of part of society. So I was connected up with many of the surfing fraternity in Sydney. And there was one very famous, extremely famous Australian surfer who had become a devotee. His name was Ted Spencer. And he's still basically a devotee, actually. And I saw it maybe 6 months ago or some little while ago. I saw somewhere on the internet, Ted Spencer got an award from the Australian, like, surfing, whatever they are, surfing society. They're all the big fellows in the surfing scene. And so I was watching this, it was a video of him being presented with his award, and they mentioned how he's still involved in Hare Krishna, and, although I've not met him personally. So anyway, this fella, he surfed in the World Championships with a shaved head and a seeker. Yeah. And he was just one of the top 10, perhaps, in the world. Ted Spencer, you can look him up on Google if you like. So anyway, Ted Spencer, he had given one of the young surfing people a Simply Wonderful, a sweet prasadam offered to Krishna. It was about this size. It's a world record. Anyway, it was a big one. It was really big. And he told him, take it to all the surfers on the north coast, north shore, north side of Sydney, and get everyone to take a bite. So this fellow, his name, would you believe, was Spider. Spider rolled up at our front door one morning and said, here, this is from Ted Spencer. He wants you to take a bite. And I looked at this thing. It was somewhat smaller. And it had many tooth marks. And I looked at it and I thought, are you serious? But he was definitely serious. So I took a bite. It was the first prasadam I ever had. Yeah. And I must admit, I think when they made it, they put too much butter in it. But it was prasadam, so, you know, we shouldn't say anything negative about it. So, yeah, so that happened. Then I went to England on a ship, on a passenger liner, North Star, I think, or Southern Cross, through South Africa. We stopped in Durban and in Cape Town. Yeah, for a day or so in each place. 72, it was like November, December, 72. And ended up in London. And it's a long story, but right at the end of 72, perhaps the first couple of days of 73, something like that, I was looking for the Hare Krishna temple. And I was frequenting one occult bookshop, which the last time I was in London, it was still there, the Aquarius. And one day, I would go and look at the books. One day I was in there looking at the books. And I asked them, you know where the Hare Krishna temple is? And they said, yes, it's just on the other side of the block, around the corner and then around the next corner, and you're there. So, yeah, I rolled up at the Hare Krishna temple, and I was there for the day. Well, I must tell you, when I first knocked on the door and opened the door and walked in, there was one young brahmachari, means like a young celibate student, he's probably 21 or 22, something like that. I was, at that point, I was 21 now. So I walked through the door, walked up to him. I was looking for a spiritual master. And I asked him, "Are you a spiritual master?" He wasn't. And he looked at me. He gave me this look like, you know, what are you talking about? And he said, "You look really spaced out." And he walked off. Thank you. But I was really determined, so I didn't let it bother me. And then one devotee, some of you would have met Subhag Swami from Bengal. Subhag, extremely pleasant person, just a wonderful person. He came down the stairs and I asked him if he was a spiritual master. And he said, "No," but he took me into the temple and spoke to me and showed me the deities, and he was very nice to me. So then I stayed on until the evening. In the evening they introduced me to the temple president. And lo and behold, the temple president was a long lost relative of mine. Second cousin once or perhaps twice removed. We had the same paternal grandfather from Scotland, Motherwell, near Glasgow. And we recognized, and we had the same family name, which is an obscure Scottish family name. And we realized, we are related. So I thought, aha, it is meant to be a sign. I think it was, actually. So I was coming around for about a week or 10 days. And then I moved into the temple on January the 7th, 1973. Now, anyway, I shouldn't talk about myself, but he asked me to. So it's his fault. But then now, the second time I saw Srila Prabhupada was shortly after that. That was January. Now we go on to, I think, May. In April, George Harrison of the Beatles had given the devotees, or not just given, but he had bought for the devotees and paid for himself, a very substantial property just outside London. You know, perhaps you're not familiar with London, but it's just kind of northwest Watford, near Watford, Radlett. And really magnificent place, beautiful place, very beautiful place. And the devotees had moved in, that was April, and they were settling in and doing different fixing ups and repairs and things. And Prabhupada came. Prabhupada came in May, as I recall. In May, I was staying at the time in the temple right in the center of London. But when Prabhupada came, we all went out to meet Prabhupada. We all went out to the manor, Bhaktivedanta Manor, to meet Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada came and he landed in Heathrow, and came by helicopter to Bhaktivedanta Manor. And all the, like you'd say, full-time temple resident devotees from Europe, the great majority, plenty of them, were there, at least 500. And so they queued up from the helicopter and around and into what we use now as the main entrance there. And Prabhupada, they made two lines. Prabhupada walked between them. And the devotees, as Prabhupada came along, they'd offer obeisances. So it's like a domino effect, sort of ripple effect of devotees offering obeisances, and Prabhupada then came into the building, walked along the main hallway, around to the bottom, just by the bottom of the stairs going up, where his rooms were. So I was one of the new boys. Can you imagine me being a new boy? 21, a ripe old age. I was one of the new boys. And I was at the end of the queue. Right at the end. At the bottom of the stairs where Prabhupada would then go up to his rooms. So Srila Prabhupada came along, and like we said, as Prabhupada was coming through, everyone would offer obeisances. And we did too. We bowed down on our hands and knees. And Srila Prabhupada stopped, not quite in front of me, but in front of the person just before me. Prabhupada stopped, and we were down. And we didn't know, Prabhupada was talking to someone, and we didn't know what to do. Should we be conservative and stay down? Or should we just sort of relax a bit and get up and say, Hare Krishna, and just carry on with life? So we took the conservative approach. We stayed down for a good minute or so as Prabhupada was standing just in front of this other devotee next to me. So there we were. And this other devotee next to me, he put his hand out slowly, like along the floor. He put his hand out and out and out towards Srila Prabhupada's, I guess, left foot, and out, and he stretched a bit, and he touched Prabhupada's lotus foot, and touched his hand to his head, and we're down. So then he turned to me. You can imagine we're down, here's the floor. He turned to me, and he went. But Prabhupada was a little further away from me. But this devotee is going. All right, okay, let's have a go. So out went my hand, right hand towards Prabhupada. And out, and out. And there was one big sannyasi there with Prabhupada, Brahmananda Swami. And he had a sannyas danda. And it was big. He was big, and his danda was really big. It was a really solid danda. And he saw my hand coming
out.
That's the one.
That's the one.
And
it was Brahmananda's danda.
Is that it? Oh, okay. Maybe. And he saw my hand. So, he was talking to Prabhupada, without taking his eye off Prabhupada, making it look like he's being nonchalant, with his danda, he banged on my hand. So I pulled my hand back. But the other devotee next to me, he's watching this, and he turned to me again, and there's the floor. All right, here we go, second time. And out, and out, and out, but Prabhupada was further away. So out, and out. And I managed to touch Prabhupada's lotus foot. And I think, therefore, I'm still here today. Special mercy. Right. I could mention a number of things. Let me mention about the time I got second initiation. It was 1974 now, maybe like early spring. I can't remember exactly, but it was 74. So I was to get second. I'd already received first initiation sometime. While Prabhupada had been there in 73, he stayed for quite some time. So then the second initiation was several months, perhaps 9 months later. And there was a group of us, some to receive first, some to receive second. And Prabhupada called for us. He wanted to meet with the candidates for initiation. So in we went, perhaps 10 of us or something like that, or 12 maybe. And we bowed down to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada asked, "So, are you all chanting 16 rounds?" You know, the great majority of you know what that means. Are you all chanting 16 rounds? It means, you know, you've got to make a bit of an effort to do 16 rounds. It takes a couple of hours. So a couple of young girls, they were perhaps not even 20. They giggled. And they said, "No, Srila Prabhupada, we're not." Srila Prabhupada cancelled the whole initiation for all of us. All of us, including, you know, me and the others who were chanting 16 rounds. And so you can imagine those young ladies were really not very popular. Anyway, the initiation did happen a couple of weeks later. So now, as part of that second initiation, the spiritual master has to give the disciple certain mantras, seven Gayatri mantras, seven. So straight after Mangal Arati, like 5 o'clock in the morning, the next day after the ceremony, the fire sacrifice, we had to go into Prabhupada's room to receive the mantras. But one by one, and I was the first one, and I didn't know what was going to happen at all. So I went in, and it was the first time that I had been alone with Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada was a very imposing personality. In the sense, like, he had a powerful presence. A very powerful presence. And we, of course, we held him in great reverence. We had very great respect for him. And now here I am on my own with Prabhupada for the first time. And when you get second initiation, you're given a thread which goes across the left shoulder, then around the chest, and around the right hips, more or less, like that. And the person who had done the fire sacrifice the day before, he had put it on me the day before. So I came in to receive the mantras. Srila Prabhupada looked at me. And Srila Prabhupada said, "Why have you got your Brahman thread on?" I had no idea why I had it on, or if I might not have had it on, or whatever. So I was just dumbstruck, I'm afraid. And then Prabhupada, you know, he noticed I was sort of slightly incapacitated. So he said, "Who put it on you?" And I gave the name of the person, Rabhatanandan Swami. And Prabhupada said, "Why did he put it on you?" No idea at all. And Prabhupada said that he should not have done that. I wanted to do that. Then Prabhupada gave me the mantras, seven mantras, which I didn't even actually know what I was going to receive. So I'd never heard of the mantras before. And they're, you know, some of them are a little bit complicated mantras. And he gave me a sheet with them printed on it. And he just recited them fast. They say, like the wind blowing. Then he said, now you chant them. Oops. So I was thinking, gosh, if I don't get this right, what's going to happen? But I got it right. Oh, actually, no, there was one other thing. Before that, the thread. You know, why? Who? He called for the temple president, Mukunda. Now Mukunda Maharaj. Called him in. He's running this temple. At that time, there's like 500 people there, and he's got to see that everything goes on. It's really a big job. So he came in, and Prabhupada said, why has this boy got his Brahmin thread on? And Mukunda Maharaj went. Also. And then Prabhupada let him go. And, well, actually, Prabhupada said, asked him, why? Why? And Prabhupada and Mukunda Maharaj didn't know. And Prabhupada asked him, why do you not know? You're the temple president. You should know what is happening. I could just mention as an aside a little, it's a very small story. One of our very senior devotees, he's now a member of the governing, international governing body, Badri Narayan Swami. When he was a new, not quite so new, but fairly new boy, early to mid-20s, he was made the temple president of our temple in San Diego, California. And Prabhupada was there. And the next morning, well, every morning Prabhupada would go for a morning walk. And now the new temple president, Badri Narayan Swami, he went with Prabhupada and various others on the morning walk. And he thought, I have just been made temple president. It is very important service. Let me ask Prabhupada a profound question about being a temple president. So in the middle of the walk, he asked Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, what are the duties, responsibilities of a temple president? Srila Prabhupada looked at him. And Prabhupada said, the temple president is the person who, if anything goes wrong in the temple, it is his fault. That's sort of classic Prabhupada. Yeah. So he expected Mukunda to know why I had my Brahmin thread on. Okay, anyway. Yeah, so there were a couple of other little details, but that's the main thing. Then, okay, now let me tell you another thing. Experience I had with Prabhupada at that time, around that time. I mean, 73 actually, when Prabhupada first came to the manor. So, the temple president from Edinburgh was there. And the temple president from Edinburgh told Srila Prabhupada that in Edinburgh, we are using a very old building. It is about 300 years old. Yeah. And in a fairly large building, we were just using one floor of it. He said that this old building has many rats. There are many rats there. And he asked Prabhupada, is it all right if we kill the rats? And Prabhupada looked at him. And Srila Prabhupada answered, if you kill the rats, you should be killed. The temple president didn't quite get it. And then so he sort of responded, saying, but Prabhupada, it's an old building, there are many rats, they're not clean, they're a health hazard, so is it all right if we kill the rats? And Prabhupada again looked at him. If you kill the rats, you should be killed. So now in Bhaktivedanta Manor, this is all happening in Bhaktivedanta Manor just outside London. So we had no rats. I think because the mice had got them. There were so many mice, it was just fantastic. You wouldn't have believed it. It was just amazing. You walk into any room, if the room is empty, there's nobody in it. It's a big building, many rooms. You walk into any room, there will always be a whole gang of mice. Oh yeah, every time. And during Mangal Arati, early in the morning, we're offering arati to the deities, and the devotees are singing. And the mice would be on the altar, dancing on the altar. And we'd chase them off the altar and go back to continue offering the arati. And they would come back and dance. So we didn't know what to do. So someone, not me, but someone, went to Srila Prabhupada and explained, this is the problem. We have these mice, really a lot of mice. What should we do? You know, we understand now we can't kill them. So Srila Prabhupada said, the mice are not here for the association, for the company. They are here for food. So if you keep the place spotlessly clean, so there's just no food sort of things here and there lying around, they'll have nothing to eat, and they'll go somewhere else where they can find food. So we did that. We formed a sort of like a, what would you say, a death, not death squad, but a team, a group of like four or five devotees, and that was all they did from morning till night. They cleaned the building. And when they'd been around once, they just went around a second time. And they would clean this whole big building like four or five times a day. It was spotless. But devotees and friends, the mice did not get the message. They were still there. And we thought, Maybe they are here for the association. So then one devotee, I must say, don't mind me saying it, one devotee got a very brilliant idea. At the time we thought this is coming directly from God, an inspiration from above. One devotee got a cat, female cat. Take a guess what we named her. Nrisinga Devi. And Nrisinga Devi. She was just sort of a normal looking cat when we got her. Within a week, she had put on a lot of weight. And we just didn't see the mice around so much at all. Every now and then a piece of a mouse. Excuse me. But, yeah. This is what happened. Let me just tell you one other experience I had with Prabhupada. There's a few more. I'll just tell you one more. It's a very interesting one. It was in 74. I'm pretty sure it was 74. During the northern summer. So Prabhupada was there, and every afternoon, as was his practice generally, he would have what we call a darshan. Whoever was around could go into his room, or his sort of the room where he received people, and just sit down, and Prabhupada would come out and answer questions and talk about things, but particularly answer questions. So I remember one day, I remember very, very vividly being there one afternoon, and this was going on. And one devotee asked Prabhupada, he actually read a few sentences, or one or two sentences perhaps, from Nectar of Devotion about offenses. There, there are three lists of different types of offenses in that chapter. The first two lists, those offenses, you know, they're offenses, so they're not to be just taken lightly, but they're not so serious. But the third list is the famous 10 offenses against the chanting of the holy names. So this particular devotee is asking Prabhupada, he read from that chapter a couple of sentences, that if you perform any of those, the first two groups, they're offenses, but they're not too serious. Then if you just chant Hare Krishna and you just carry on serving Krishna, you'll become freed from the reactions. However, and you can have a look and read it for yourself in Nectar of Devotion, it's there. However, if you commit any of these 10 offenses against the chanting of the holy names, you cannot become free from the reactions. So the devotee read that. And then he said to Srila Prabhupada, but Prabhupada, isn't there something you can do if you commit those offenses to get free from the reactions? Isn't there something? And Prabhupada gave him one of his looks. Yeah, just sort of, you know, sure, I can't imitate. And Prabhupada said, you are asking this question because you want to offend. It was definitely one of those. Wow. Really heavy. Really, really heavy. And Prabhupada said to him, yes, you want to commit some offense and just do something and just become free. Prabhupada said, but no, you must not think like that. Prabhupada said, you must stop offending. No more offenses. That was a very profound moment. And we should all remember that and try our best to put it into effect. Then during that same darshan session, it went on perhaps for an hour or something, one other devotee asked Prabhupada a question. It's a very hypothetical question. Sometimes we call it a what if question. But the what if, you know, some situation is there. It's kind of, you know, very out of the ordinary and very unlikely. So what if you are living on a desert island? Not very likely. But what if you are? And it's just you and one animal. And there's nothing to eat except seaweed. And you've already got all the seaweed you could get. And that's it. There's nothing to eat. Would it be all right to kill and eat the animal? So Srila Prabhupada, I remember so vividly, Prabhupada actually turned and looked at me. It's okay. Prabhupada turned and looked at me and he said, a devotee would rather die. So that was quite an experience. I remember another time there in Bhaktivedanta Manor, one famous musician of those days, you know, we're talking about the mid-70s, very famous at that time, British kind of folk pop singer, his name was Donovan. he came to visit Srila Prabhupada. He was extremely famous. He came to visit Srila Prabhupada with his girlfriend. And Donovan, he was a very nice person. He was very interested. But his girlfriend was just the opposite. She had a super duper short miniskirt. And she was just, you know, that type of person. She was really. And she didn't like that her man, Donovan, liked Krishna consciousness and was giving attention to Prabhupada, not to her. And so, you know, there's a little conversation between Donovan and Prabhupada. And then she interrupted. And she said to Srila Prabhupada, "Why do you have such long robes? And why do you have such short hair?" She had long hair and very short skirts. And Prabhupada replied, "Better to have a cool head and warm legs than cold legs and a hot head." And the poor girl, she just couldn't deal with it. And she just walked out. And Donovan had to unfortunately go out also. Such is life. Then there was another occasion, quite notable. Some members, like officials, from the British Rationalist Society. It is basically the Atheist Society. They came to see Prabhupada. Prabhupada didn't know who they were. You see, we had this one devotee, Shyam Sundar. He's sort of still around somewhere. He was the leader in England at the time. And he had all these contacts. So many contacts. He was just expert at networking. He's the one who met the Beatles and really, you know, influenced the Beatles, particularly John Harrison, but all of them in a big way. So he had invited all these people. Graham Hill came, Formula One motor car racing champion. He came. The Archbishop of Canterbury, I guess he is, came, and all sorts of people. Toynbee, Alfred Toynbee, was that his name? He came. So anyway, these people from the Rationalist Society or the Atheist Society, they came. And Prabhupada didn't know who they were. So he just started preaching Krishna consciousness like normal. And after just a couple of minutes, one of the men interrupted Prabhupada and said, "Listen, you know, we are atheists. We're not interested in all this God stuff. So, you know, please, no more of that." And Prabhupada, just like that, on a turn, Prabhupada just captured the idea immediately. And Prabhupada said, "Oh, you're atheists. That's wonderful. I'm just so happy to meet you. Atheists think." And Prabhupada said, "I'm so tired of meeting religionists who just believe in things. But I like people who think and they want answers." And the people, the atheists, they were like, "Oh, okay, that's good, thank you." So Prabhupada preached to them for about half an hour without mentioning anything to do with God. And they were just so interested. Eventually when they left, they thanked Prabhupada profusely and said, "You know, we didn't expect this. We thought we're just coming to waste our time talking about God or something. But you've given us objective philosophy. Thank you so much. This was Prabhupada. Really expert. Really expert. A similar situation was once in Bombay. I was not there at all. But some young men, they were like sort of very typical mainstream Hindus. Very typical, very mainstream. They came to meet Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was preaching to them that you should serve Krishna and be devotees of Krishna. And after a while they said to Prabhupada, you know, that's very nice, but we have our own philosophy, or we follow like a slightly different philosophy. Our philosophy is service to man is service to God. You may have heard of that. It's, you know, amongst mainstream Hindus, it's such a popular type of slogan. Service to man is service to God. And Srila Prabhupada said, oh, I see. Service to man is service to God. Prabhupada said, well, if service to God, to man is service to God, then service to God must be service to man. Did you catch it? Yeah. If two things are equal, they're, you know, also equal the other way around. So if service to man is service to God must be service to man. They never thought of that before. So it was really like one of those wow moments. And Prabhupada said, so the only question is, which is easier? And Prabhupada said, you want to serve man? There's 7 billion of them. Are you going to serve all of them? Well, the answer to that, of course, is no. But Krishna, you want to serve God? Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam Yome Bhaktiya Prayachati. If you offer me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I'll accept it. So Prabhupada made that point, that it's so much easier to serve God than to serve humanity. And those young men, they were sort of shell-shocked. Yeah. So, but Prabhupada was very, very quick in his thinking. Extremely quick and extremely precise. And he could, I would say, immediately, even just by looking at a person, understand where the person's coming from, what sort of state of mind he has, and emotional condition and so on, and then pinpoint something to really make an impression on that person. In fact, Prabhupada said it himself. Prabhupada said, I am like a karate expert. You know what karate is? What are you doing? Do you do karate? Prabhupada said, I am like a karate expert. I know how to find a person's weak point and then kill him, figuratively, which was really true. I'll tell you a similar story also from Mumbai. So somehow, you know, sometimes people, so many people would come wanting to see Prabhupada, and his secretary or assistant would sort of screen them, who are you, what do you want to see him about? But sometimes the wrong types of people got in. So one day, one wrong type of young man got in. That young man was a meat-eating sort of like propagandist. He was trying to spread meat eating and convince people that meat eating is a very good thing, which of course, you know, is just not part of our perspective on life. So he was with Prabhupada, and he said a few things like that. And he said, you know, here in India, look at all the young men, look at them, they're all skinny, they're weak. You know, they can't do anything. Because they don't eat meat. They should eat meat. And they come big and strong. He himself was one of the skinny young men, actually. Although he was obviously a meat eater. In the room was the same Brahmananda, you remember, with the danda on my hand. The same Brahmananda was there. And Brahmananda was a big man. He was a big man. He was New York amateur heavyweight wrestling champion in New York State. Big, powerful man. Big, really big, like, I don't know, 130, 150 kilos, something like that, and just all muscle. So he was sitting in the room, and this man's telling Prabhupada that, you know, people don't eat meat. They're going to be weak. No muscles. They won't be able to do anything. And Prabhupada pointed at Brahmananda and said, you see this man? He is vegetarian. He can kill you with one hand. And the meat-eating campaigner just sort of exited. Okay. Now, let's see. Well, no. Okay, let's go in some different directions. We have time, don't we? Of course we do. Okay, here's a funny little story. It's also from London. There was this one devotee, he passed away, unfortunately, about maybe 10 years ago. Tribhuvanath, he was Irish, but he joined in London and he was based there. And when Prabhupada first came, they took Prabhupada by taxi to some program somewhere in sort of roughly central London or somewhere. And to get there, they took the route, the taxi took the route down to Buckingham Palace, and then you turn left and you go down towards the river. So they're approaching Buckingham Palace, and Prabhupada saw, okay, there's Buckingham Palace. And one devotee who was in the car got a bit excited and said, Srila Prabhupada, do you know one of the guards from Buckingham Palace, the ones who wear the busbies, I think they're called, the big black hats and the red uniforms and march up and down. He said, one of the guards has become a devotee. He's a very important man. He's one of the guards from Buckingham Palace. Yeah, so it's you know, it's important. He's an important man. He's become a devotee. It's very good. And just as they're turning in front of Buckingham Palace, Prabhupada, in a typically nonchalant way, Srila Prabhupada said, and what about the Queen? One time, Prabhupada was flying somewhere, flying in first class with an assistant next to him in row one on an airplane. Big airplane, so they're sitting there and they're playing a movie. In those days, you didn't have your personalized little screen. They just showed a movie on the big screen, which was right in front of row number one. So it was almost right on top of them. And if you're older, you would have heard of David Niven. Did you hear of David Niven? Mm-hmm. He was in all the Second World War movies, the big war hero. So this was a David Niven movie was being shown there, right in front of their faces. And David, Prabhupada was sort of looking, and then not looking, and then looking a bit, and then not looking. And so now in the movie, David Niven, he's got to go up the hill. The enemy are on top. He's got to get them. So David Niven has got his gun, and he's running up the hill now. And suddenly, bang, David Niven goes down. But no, he gets up again and picks up his gun and he's off back up the hill again. Here he goes. And Prabhupada's watching this. And suddenly again, bang, he's down again. Oh, but he picks up his gun and he's running up the hill again. And Prabhupada dozed off for maybe 30 seconds or something. And Prabhupada woke up. And there's David Niven. He's going up the hill. And he gets hit again. And Prabhupada said to his assistant, "Oh, not dead yet." Okay, here's something a little, it's all deep, but this is a little deeper. Prabhupada was in the central London temple. I had not joined at that time. It was either 71 or 72. And Prabhupada, in that temple, it's sort of something similar to here, except the temple room was not even that much bigger, maybe at most twice the size or less. And Prabhupada would sit like this, and the altar was there, except Prabhupada would be right against, you see where the curtains are, right there. He could practically, just touch the curtains like that and almost lean over and touch the deities on the altar. So Prabhupada was there, and he had just given the class, just as he's sitting here now, to the devotees who were assembled there. And Prabhupada, at the end of the class, he stopped and he looked at the deities. There in London, the deities in central London, they're known as Radha London Ishwara, means Radharani and Krishna, who is the Lord of London. So Prabhupada is now sitting just like this, but turned and looking a little across to the deities. And then Prabhupada turned to the devotees, and he seemed to become a little emotional. And Prabhupada then said to the devotees, "I have captured Krishna. I'm holding him here for you. Now you please come and take him." This was the mood of Prabhupada, giving Krishna in a very kind way, generous way. He, as a person who was very close, personal relationship with Krishna, personal associate, making Krishna available to all the devotees. Another story, in a somewhat similar vein, Prabhupada was in Mayapur, West Bengal, in the very early days. It may have been 74 or 5 or something. There was only one building on our land at that time. And Prabhupada was up on the roof, looking out over the surrounding landscape. Mayapur, it's very flat, but it's tropical. And so it's very green and palm trees, and it's just very lush, tropical type of scene. And Prabhupada was looking around over that very beautiful scene, the Ganges on one side, Jalangi on the other side. And Prabhupada started telling the one devotee who was with him that I want to develop Mayapur, because Mayapur is just so wonderful. I want the whole world to come here and learn about Lord Chaitanya in Mayapur, because it's such a wonderful place. But then Prabhupada started talking about how the material world, just the world at large, it's so horrible. It's so terrible. Birth, death, old age, disease, so much difficulty and suffering. It's terrible. And then Prabhupada told that devotee, I didn't want to come, but Krishna told me, you must come. The people need your books. And Prabhupada said, that I told Krishna, but I don't want to come. It's so horrible. But Prabhupada said, Krishna told him, you have to come. They need your books. If you don't come, what will they do? In other words, we're talking about someone who has a very deep personal relationship with the Supreme Lord. Let me tell you a little amusing story. Lighten things up a little. One in San Diego, actually. In San Diego, I mentioned earlier. The temple president, not Bhadri Narayan Swami, but the person before him, the temple president, but Bhadri Narayan Swami was there and he told us the story. The temple president, somehow or other, some business person, merchant, food, sales business person, had offered the temple peanut oil, cheap, a lot of peanut oil. The temple could use it for months. So Prabhupada was there. Something just happened. Have you all?
I check it to blue.
Something, okay, here we go. So the temple president asked Prabhupada, is it all right to use peanut oil to cook for the devotees? And Srila Prabhupada said, well, better not to use it. Temple president said, but Srila Prabhupada, we've been offered up like some month's supply, very cheap. We'll save a lot of money, we'll use it for book distribution. So is it all right if we use peanut oil? And Prabhupada said, no, really, it would really be better not to use it. Please. But the temple president said, but Prabhupada, it's very cheap. We want to support book distribution. And Prabhupada said, all right, just use anything you like. And the president's a little taken aback by that. And Prabhupada said, I knew one man. One night he ate many pakoras which had been fried in peanut oil. I knew him. Many pakoras one night. And the president said, oh, what happened to him, Prabhupada? Prabhupada said, he died the next morning. So there was no more talk about peanut oil. Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada was coming from a different culture. India, in the, you know, he was born in 1896. It's a different world. And then he came to America in 65. And I don't know how many of you were in India in the 60s. I went there first in 76. And even in 76, it was really different to what it's like in 2018. It's a really different place. Sure. So, yes, okay. Srila Prabhupada, he was coming from that sort of culture, and a Vaishnava family, very strict religious family, extremely pious, extremely cultured. And then he came to America, and he found the people who were interested, at least say 90% or even practically 100, but at least 90%, they were young hippies. And in a very traditional Indian person in 1965, and the hippies in Lower East Side, Manhattan, New York. Whew, talk about polar opposites in terms of character. But Prabhupada, he managed to get on with them extremely well, really well. And they loved him, and he loved them. He really appreciated their sincerity, even though they were lacking in culture. Oh, it's quite shocking, actually, how they are lacking in culture. But he really appreciated their sincerity. Let me quickly tell you a little joke. Are there any Australians in the room? I'm from New Zealand. New Zealanders are far superior to Australians. That's what the New Zealanders say. Okay, Australians. All right then. What's the difference between yogurt and an Australian? Okay. The difference is the yogurt is cultured. I didn't say that. I didn't tell anyone I said that. I didn't. So, okay, so here we are in Vrindavan now in India. And one of Prabhupada's quite senior disciples, Trivikram Swami, extremely nice devotee, just a gem. He was massaging Prabhupada every day. Prabhupada would have massage usually twice a day, quite an extensive massage. So Trivikram Swami was massaging Prabhupada, and one day Prabhupada said, I am going to America next week. And Trivikram Swami said, oh, Srila Prabhupada, I think I should come with you to massage you. And Prabhupada said, no, it's not necessary. There's one devotee, Upendra. Upendra is there. He has experience. He can do it. And so now every day, there's a week to go, every day Trivikram Swami is doing the massage and saying, but Prabhupada, perhaps I should come. And Prabhupada saying, no, it's not necessary. Upendra will do it. And second to last day, Trivikram Swami asked Prabhupada, is Upendra, does he give a good massage? And Prabhupada said, yes, very good, very good. Okay, what to do? Last day, Trivikram Swami, last chance. He said, Srila Prabhupada, is Upendra a nice boy? And Srila Prabhupada answered, yes, he's a very nice boy, but not as nice as you. And Trivikram Swami understood. Prabhupada loved him. And Prabhupada did. He loved the devotees, even though they, you know, particularly the hippies in those days, they just almost from a different planet. Okay, so now let's see what to do. Maybe tell you another story. Peanut oil. Okay, I want to tell you an interesting story. from South America. Srila Prabhupada went to South America a couple of times, I think. And one time, well, let me preface it by saying that Shruta Kirti Prabhu, who traveled with Prabhupada for some time, he, from time to time, now since Prabhupada's left this world, he travels, he has printed at least one book about his experiences with Prabhupada. And so sometimes he travels around and does seminars just telling the devotees about his experiences with Prabhupada. So one time he was in Brazil, and he told the story I'm just about to tell you. Listen to this. Prabhupada was flying on Venezuela Airlines with him, Shruta Kirti Prabhu, and one or two other devotees. So the plane takes off. Prabhupada asks, do we have any prasadam? So all they had was some, it's sort of like muri, would you say? Mm-hmm. Puffed rice, spiced puffed rice with some peanuts, maybe a few here and there. It's just a snacky type of thing. Very typical Indian snack. That's all they had. So his assistant, Prabhupada's assistant, put some out on just like a paper tissue, sort of a serviette type of thing. He put a little pile of puffed rice. And one stewardess, young woman, walked by, and she just happened to look over and see there was Prabhupada eating the puffed rice. And she said, oh, what's that? And the servant said, it's puffed rice. And she said, oh, it looks nice. Can I try it? But before waiting for a response, she just grabbed some off Prabhupada's plate, which he had already been eating from. She just grabbed some and just ate it. And she said, oh, that's really nice. What is it? Explain it. She's very interested. And the devotee explained a bit. And she said, but is that all you have? Oh, I'll get you meals. And the devotee said, no, we don't eat the airplane food. And she said, oh, no problem, I'll get you fruit. They were in economy class. I'll go to first class and I'll get you fruit. And she came back with a whole bowl of whole fruits. Here, take this. Do you want something to drink? Do you want some tea? We don't drink tea. Oh, what do you drink? Do you have milk? Oh, yes, of course. We drink hot milk. Oh, okay. All right. In a few minutes, she came back with like a couple of liters of hot milk. We normally take sugar with it. Oh, okay. She went and got sugar. And she just looked after them for that flight. She really looked after them. And her mood was just, you know, nothing was too much trouble for her. She was just ready to help. So they arrived wherever, and they're getting off the plane, and she was there at the door. And she was just, oh, so nice to meet you and have a wonderful time. And like this very pleasant and enthusiastic. So Shruta Kirti told that story in Brazil. It was maybe 10 years ago, perhaps, that he told the story. It was probably 75, something like that, that had happened. At the end of the class, one devotee came and spoke to him and said, you know that woman, the young woman stewardess on the plane? Well, let me just tell you something. He said, just recently, a group of us, we were way up the Amazon doing book distribution in the villages. The only way you can go is by boat. There are no roads, railways, nothing. So we were in one village way up there in the Amazon. We were in one village going door to door and distributing books to the people. And I knocked on a door, and the door opened. And there's a woman with a sari on and tilak. And I couldn't believe it. And she couldn't believe it to see me. And she said, "Oh, you're a devotee. Please come in." So in he went, and she had Gornatai deities and pictures on the wall, and it was just a real devotee's place. And the devotee asked her, "How did you become a devotee up here in the middle of nowhere?" And she said, "You wouldn't believe it. Many years ago, when I was young, I was an air stewardess on Venezuela Airlines, and Prabhupada was on the plane, and I ate some of his puffed rice." Yeah. And then I rendered service to Prabhupada and the devotees. And after that, I just got so much inspiration, and here I am. So you see, it's very interesting, isn't it? Yeah. I think I'm going to have to wind up. Or should I carry on? Well, you tell me, what should I do?
Yes, because anything goes wrong, I'll be...
So we should stop.
Tomorrow we'll continue.
Yeah, or maybe on Tuesday. Or something.
Yeah.
Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Go for him and hand it.